Okay, thank you very much for joining with this Sutta teaching session. So we will start the session with paying homage to the Buddha by saying Namo Tassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස. So as you know, this is a sutta teaching session or sutta related dhamma sermon. So we started a couple of weeks ago, and we have taken Sabbasava Sutta as the first topic in this series. Actually, we have discussed several weeks according to this sutta, and actually this is coming in Majjhima Nikaya. This is the second sutta in Majjhima Nikaya. In this sutta, Buddha talks about taints, or what we sometimes call as asavas, influxes. So this literally means that when defilements are operating in our minds for long time, it creates some kind of a tendency, it creates some kind of a habit in the mind. So even then, without any kind of a stimulation, the potential is available in the mind to operate in a certain manner, certain pattern. So in a way, this ultimately leads to condition the mind. So suppose when there is some kind of a habit that you are used to, and then you get some habituated to that kind of a habit. So then ultimately it becomes quite difficult to remove it, quite difficult to come out of it, because you are being habituated and you are being conditioned to operate in that manner, operate in that cycle. This is like kind of an addiction. So all these kind of addictions, these kind of habits, latent tendencies, hidden tendencies, are operating in a way to bound us to the samsara. So therefore, sometimes these asavas are talked in a different manner, calling ogha, that means floods, and sometimes called yoga, that means yokes or kind of binding ropes. And therefore Buddha explained this type of different tendencies in us, habits in us. And in this sutta, Buddha talks about three asavas: kamasava, which is the sensual desire; bhavasava, the desire for being, and this desire to continue, desire to exist; and avijjasava, the ignorance. And in certain other suttas, especially when it comes to Abhidhamma, it is mention another asava. This is called dittasava, influx of views. Actually, influx of views can be considered under the ignorance, avijjasava, and therefore typically we have three asavas widely explained in suttas. So in this Sabbasava Sutta, Buddha talked about six strategies or six methods which we can apply occasionally, depending on the situation, to overcome asavas. So we went going through one by one. Number one is Attibhikkhave asava dasana pahatabba. We are monks, there is a possibility of relinquishing these latent tendencies by wisely seeing, wisely understanding, especially wisely reflecting. So typically we think in a surface level or superficial manner, where we are not seeing the roots, we are not seeing the causes, and we simply take decisions and operate thinking just in the typical conventional manner. But in this Yoniso Manasikara, wise reflection, we are requested to see the causes, see the roots. And accordingly, we are little penetrating to the deep levels of our mind, and that leads to proper understanding, that leads to correct understanding. and therefore this asava samvara, this asava dasana pahatabba, we discuss in length how it is happening to a unknown person or ordinary person who is not aware of the Dhamma and who is not practicing, and he is simply operating in the surface level. So what are the issues he is going through? So we discuss that in detail, and then we discuss the situation about Arya Savaka, that means the one who is practicing and well heard about Buddha's teaching. Therefore he is in a good position to understand what is going on in his mind. So in this part, actually Buddha emphasized on Four Noble Truths, understanding suffering, unsatisfactoriness as unsatisfactoriness, not adjoining it to a person, not linking it to a self. Rather, suffering, unsatisfactoriness is just unsatisfactoriness. So Buddha requests us to understand it rather than trying to get rid of it. Buddha requests us to understand suffering as suffering. There is suffering. So looking at it objectively is one of the key point here, rather than personifying it, rather than taking it as our own personal self-related experience. We have to look at it objectively so we can recognize suffering as suffering, unsatisfactoriness as unsatisfactoriness. So as a result of that, we can go a little deeper and recognize the causes. Then we get to the second noble truth, that is Dukkha Samudaya. So once we recognize Dukkha Samudaya, once we understand Dukkha Samudaya, Buddha says, they are the desires. Kama Tanha, Bhava Tanha, Vibhava Tanha, the desire to sense pleasures, desire to exist, and desire to get rid of. So these kinds of various desires could be recognized once we are reflecting about our own mind. And Buddha says this is the cause of suffering. And once we understood those causes, Buddha asked us to let it go. So that is the kind of practice we need to do with related to the second noble truth. So once we let go of the desire, then again mind become calm, mind become free from suffering. Now the suffering has ceased. So once suffering has ceased, mind has certain level of peace, certain level of calmness, certain level of serenity, certain level of spaciousness, tension-free, stress-free situation. So Buddha asks us to realize that, rather than thinking this is boring, this is monotonous. Rather, we need to give some marks, give some value to this tension-free situation, and as a result, we can recognize this third noble truth, where there is no irritation, there is no resistance, there is no suffering, there is no unsatisfactoriness. Rather, the mind is in a very peaceful situation. So this recipe has to be applied again and again, so that repeated application becomes fourth noble truth, and that fourth noble truth has to be developed. It is not a kind of a one day operation or one week kind of a thing. Rather, it's a lifetime practice. So all this recognition of suffering and then understanding its cause, letting go of that cause, and as a result understanding the peace of mind, this relaxed, stress-free, tension-free, spacious stillness of the mind is one of the key aspects of this practice. So this recipe has to be applied again and again, so then it becomes kind of an ongoing process, lifetime process. So the fourth noble truth has to be developed. So we discussed this also in detail. Then we came to discuss the various other strategies Buddha is recommending. The second one is by Sangvara Pahatabba, that means restraining ourselves. So we have, as human beings, we have ears, eyes, nose, tongue, body and mind. And how effectively are we using them? How correctly are we using them? So this really matters, because otherwise if we misuse our faculties, then unnecessarily we get into trouble, because it's a kind of an opening to various defilements. And we may trigger various defilements because the latent tendencies are available, asavas are available. So when various unsuitable triggering happens through the senses, so ultimately we are developing asavas, we are developing defilements, and therefore Buddha asks us to restrain our senses. Then number three, asana patisevana pahatabba. As human beings, we need clothing, we need food, we need dwelling place, we need medical requisites. So these are in a way the essentials we need in order to live. But while using these requisites, we have to be mindful, we have to be vigilant, because otherwise we might compare our usage of these requisites with someone else. And we might think we are the ones having the best, and he or she doesn't have the best. So as a result, my conceit can arise. On the other hand, if I think, okay, I am poor, I don't have much things, and the other one is having the best thing, so the jealousy can arise. So likewise, if we don't know the real purpose of using these various requisites, again, there's a possibility of arising different defilements. So therefore, Buddha asks us to wisely reflect when we are using these four requisites. When we are, say, for example, when we are eating, so why are we eating? So what is the purpose? It is not for any beautification. It is not for any kind of a playful action. Rather, it is to continue our life, to protect this body, because this wholly totally depend on the food. So without food, the body won't last. Therefore, in order to maintain this body, for our sustenance, we need food. So that is why we are eating. So the other person also eating, I am also eating. So likewise, we have some similarity. So there is nothing much to be conceited, nothing much to be jealous, because food is eaten for a purpose. So likewise, we can reflect on clothing, we can reflect on dwelling places, and we can reflect on medicine. Then we went on to number four, patiseva adivasana pahatabba, where Buddha mentioned that we have to be patient, because most of the situations are beyond our control. So we have to have a lot of patience, we have to have a lot of endurance to cope up with the situation. Suppose nowadays the corona epidemic is there, pandemic is there, so some cities, some countries are locked, and we are asked to maintain social distance, and we are asked to wear masks, and none of these are interesting, none of these are comfortable. But we have to be patient with these situations, because otherwise we get into trouble, and another person's, other people at large also get into trouble. So therefore, we have to bear the situation. So similarly, if it is hot, if it is raining, so if there are certain other difficulties, we may take various precautions and we may take various actions to minimize, but still certain part we may have to bear, we may have to be patient. So this patience, therefore Buddha highly recommended and highly praised, telling that patience is the best austerity. Kanti paramang tapo titikha. So in this our meditative life, in this spiritual life, patience is a must. There is no any instantaneous kind of an enlightenment. There is no any instantaneous kind of a freedom, but rather it's a gradual process. And therefore we have to patiently navigate, patiently go through this whole process. So not only that, Buddha mentioned that we have to be patient on various mosquitoes, wind, sun, snakes, and even the bad words coming from others. All these situations we have to be patient. And then we discussed about abandoning by avoiding. There may be various unsuitable places, there may be bad friends, and on such occasions we have to avoid them. We don't need to get on to any trouble by associating bad people. If we really know he's a bad person, why are we going to get into trouble by associating him, associating her? So we can protect ourselves by not associating them. So in this section, actually, we discuss in length coupling with Sevitabba Asevitabba Sutta, where Buddha in detail mentioned that most of the situation we have to decide whether are we going to associate or not associate depending on the wholesomeness in our mind. So if the wholesome states in our mind increases and unwholesome states in the mind diminish, then we can associate. On the other hand, if unwholesome states increase and wholesome states diminish, then we better avoid association. So this is quite practical, and in a way it is common sense, that whatever the bodily contact, whatever the verbal conduct, various mental conduct, so whenever we are thinking, whenever we are talking, whenever we do various activities, if it is leading to wholesomeness, if it is leading to the development of wholesomeness, we may continue, we may associate. But on the other hand, if it is leading to unwholesomeness, if it is deteriorating our skills, our spiritual qualities, then we better avoid it. So likewise, whenever we see something, hear something, smell something, contact with something, so all these practical situations, Buddha asks us to see this point where whether it is leading to some kind of spiritual growth, some kind of wholesomeness, or are we diminishing our already available good qualities. So depending on that, we have to take a decision. Then we discussed about vinodana pahatabba, where when we are going through our day-to-day activities, our mind sometimes have sensual desires. On such occasion, we have to be aware of what is going on in the mind, and rather than encouraging such desires, Buddha asks us to nadivaseti, not to tolerate it, and pajahati, abandon it, and vinodeti, remove it, and again byanti karoti, just away with him, away with them, and anabhavangameti, trying to keep the mind free from such desires. On the other hand, if there is any kind of ill will arising in the mind, rather than tolerating it, rather than keeping it or encouraging it, we have to abandon it, remove it. And if there is any kind of cruelty arising in the mind, that too we don't need to encourage, we don't need to become a victim of that, rather we need to avoid it, we need to remove it. And Buddha summarized it telling uppan uppanne papake akusale dhamme, where in summary, whatever any kind of unwholesome states arising in the mind, rather than encouraging them, once you recognize this is not good for me, this is not good for the other people, so we need to remove it from the mind. So this removal actually has various levels. We can use various strategies to cleanse the mind. Actually, strengthening the mind for this process is one of the important aspects of the Buddha's teaching, and now we can get on to that. So this is where we are empowering the mind. This is where we strengthening the mind in order to develop the positive qualities and in order to minimize the negative qualities. Now that is number 7, how one may develop one's mind in order to strengthen the situation, in order to increase the wholesomeness and to decrease the unwholesomeness, in order to empower the mind and to cope with various difficult situations. So likewise, There are many benefits in this section where Buddha in detail explained how one can develop one's mind by using various strategies. So these various strategies actually depending on even the situation and depending on the various person. Here actually I have taken some information from Anapanasati Sutta. Anapanasati Sutta is also available in Majjhima Nikaya. And in this Anapanasati Sutta, this is also a very interesting and very useful sutta for us as practitioners. Probably we will take this sutta also in a later time in order to discuss. But here I am going to summarize this part, because in Sabbasava Sutta, in this section, number 7, Asava Bhavana Pahatabba, Buddha directly talks about Bojjhanga. Probably you might have heard about Bojjhanga. There are 7 enlightenment factors we call as Sambojjhanga or Bojjhanga, which are actually conducive factors for understanding, conducive factors for wisdom, bodhi, realization. So that is why they are called Bojjhanga. And Buddha mentions about these Bojjhangas and how to develop them in order for knowledge and freedom. And this is briefly mentioned in Sabbasava Sutta. So therefore, for a beginner, it is difficult to understand what is these Bojjhangas, how they are going to develop, because that information is not mentioned in this sutta. But it is well mentioned, well explained in Anapanasati Sutta. So therefore, let me explain it little bit so that it is useful for all the practitioners. So how one can develop various Bojjhangas. In Anapanasati Sutta, this is, as I said, this is well explained. And using Kayanupassana, using Vedananupassana, using Chittanupassana, using Dhammanupassana, one can develop Bojjhangas. So it is, therefore you can understand, it is not unique to any kind of a practice, but each practice can be properly utilized in order to develop these various enlightenment factors. Say for example, if we take Kayanupassana. So in according to this Anapanasati Sutta, Buddha explained whole Anapanasati in 16 steps. The first 4 steps belonging to Kayanupassana, next 4 steps belonging to Vedananupassana, next 4 steps belong to Chittanupassana, and last 4 steps belonging to Dhammanupassana. So if we take the first 4 steps, just to explain you how to develop Bojjhangas using Kayanupassana, let me explain this so that the same aspect, same method can be applicable to the other sections as well. Say you are simply being aware of breath. Say now you are aware, okay, now I am breathing in, now I am breathing out. I am breathing in, breathing out. So likewise, we start with a very simple manner. We sit cross-legged, we keep our eyes closed, we may be going to a silent place, in a suitable place, and not thinking about the past and not thinking about the future, we are trying our best to focus our attention on breath. So this is a kind of a standard practice, widely practiced by millions of practitioners, millions of people. So at the beginning, this practice has some difficulties because our mind is not tamed, not focused, not concentrated, so therefore it again and again shifts to the past memories and again shifts to various future plans, hopes. So therefore we have to struggle in the beginning in order to tame the mind, because it's still, our mind doesn't like to stay with breath because it is a boring aspect, boring phenomenon. It is not that attractive, so we need a lot of effort to bring it back again and again. The distracted mind has to be brought back again and again to the breath. So assume that we succeeded. Now we can keep our attention for a considerable period of time on breath. One breath, I am with it. Another breath, I am with it. Another breath, I am with it. Likewise, suppose for consecutive 20 breaths, consecutive 50 breaths, consecutive 100 breaths. So likewise, we can keep our attention on breath. There you can understand certain skills are being developed. When we started our meditation, we didn't have any of these qualities. We may have in a very weak level, but now we are trying to strengthen those special qualities. So when we are keeping our attention on breath again and again, assume now it is well synchronized with the breath, well coupled with the breath, and it is now not distracted, and it is basically well established on breath. Now breath happens every time in the present moment, because these bodily activities, none of them is capable of happening in the past, none of them capable of happening in the future, but rather they all happen in the present moment. So now we are, our mental attribute, our attention, also well coupled in this present phenomenon, breath. Now you can see certain aspects that our mind stays in the present and well focused on a selected phenomenon. And there we can say we have established mindfulness. Now the momentary kanika samadhi also has established. Our attention is well focused, and therefore our mindfulness enlightenment factor has started. So Buddha says, whenever our attention is well focused on a certain phenomenon, and it is not wavering, it is well established, that is the point the sati sambojjhanga going to start. But when we repeat this whole process, we are observing next breath, we are observing another breath, we are observing another breath. So likewise, we continue this practice. As a result, this sati sambojjhanga, mindfulness enlightenment factor, also going to slowly develop. Because we are continuing our practice, as a result, this mindfulness enlightenment factor is also going to develop very slowly. And now Buddha doesn't stop us there. So once mindfulness is well established, he asks us to see certain qualities of the breath. He is giving some information, telling that sometimes breath may happen by one nostril. Another time it may happen on the other nostril. Sometimes it happens or it occurs in both nostrils. So likewise, there are variations. Actually, we don't have to have any of preferences. Let this happen on both nostrils, or let this happen on single nostril. We don't have any kind of such agenda, any kind of preference, but rather we have an open attitude to accept the way it is. Whatever it is, we accept, we are ready. And we simply observe and this breath, and there we understand, okay, sometimes it is happening on single nostril, sometimes on both nostrils, and sometimes breath is hot, sometimes it is cold, sometimes it is long, sometimes it is short. So likewise, now we are recognizing these subtle differences in this breath. So in breath may be long compared to out breath, in breath may be short compared to out breath, or sometimes even two consecutive in-breaths are not exactly similar. So the previous one may be longer, present one may be shorter. So likewise, very subtle differences are available. Now, breath being by itself a very subtle phenomena, in order for us to recognize these extremely subtle differences, we need very careful attention. We need to examine it very carefully. We need to investigate this phenomena very carefully. So this is the beginning of second enlightenment factor, Dhamma Vichaya. So this investigation has to happen with a very quiet mind, with a well-focused mind. So Sati Sambojjhanga has to be well started. then only this Dhamma vichaya is possible. Because when the mind is wavering, when the mind is scattered, restless, we can't do this activity. But when it is well focused and well established, then only it is possible for us to carefully examine what is going on. So therefore, this Dhamma vichaya enlightenment factor is going to develop by this examining, by this investigation, by this clear seeing, clear investigation. So you can understand, therefore, this investigation, Dhamma vichaya, going to develop because of our this practice. Now Buddha asks us to continue this practice as well. So even on next breath, you are trying to examine it. Another breath, you are trying to examine it. You are trying to investigate it. Another breath, you are trying to investigate it. So likewise, when we repeat this whole process, Dhamma vichaya, this investigation is going to develop little by little. So this is how through meditation, we are cultivating these qualities. We are cultivating these spiritual qualities. If not, these qualities are not going to be cultivated. So therefore, we need this kind of a practice, this kind of bhavana, meditation, in order to develop these various qualities. And Buddha, in a way, designed this whole practice in order to cultivate these various necessary qualities. So this is what emphasized in this section in Sabbasava Sutta. Now, again, you can understand this practice is not easy, because breath itself is not an interesting phenomena, not an attractive phenomena, and we might not like it. We may feel like get up and go for some walk, go for a movie. So likewise, we may have various thousand and one, various desires which may be attractive. But this kind of practice, this investigating breath, is not an attractive operation, attractive activity. So we need fair amount of energy, fair amount of effort to continue this. So whenever mind says, no, I can't, I need to get up, I want to go and see a movie, I want to go and listen to a music. So this all various other proposals we have to drop and come back to breath. There may be various invitations coming through our senses, asking us to hear music, asking us to see various sights, asking us to smell various odors, asking us to taste various delicious food, asking us to think about various subjects. But we have to discard all those invitations and come back to breath. So this requires a lot of effort. So this is where the effort, virya, enlightenment factor, going to develop. Again and again, when we are continuing our practice, even when the results are not yet available, so don't think that results may appear immediately. It may take long time for us to feel a considerable improvement, a considerable change in our life. So therefore, spiritual practice is not instantaneous. So it requires a lot of patience, endurance, and a lot of effort. And when we are continuing that such practice, then effort is going to develop more and more. So the virya sambojjhanga, enlightenment factor, is going to develop. Suppose now you have practiced for a fair amount of time, and as a result, the mind is fairly tamed, and well-established mindfulness is available, and you know how to investigate, examine the phenomenon, and you have balanced effort. Now, as a result, some kind of happiness is available, because now you have succeeded. At the beginning of your practice, you have to struggle. It was a kind of a failure. But now, because of your continuous effort, you have succeeded to some extent. There you can be happy. So that is how piti sambojjhanga, rapture, going to arise. So once you recognize, okay, now mind has fairly tamed, fairly focused, and I can examine the present phenomenon, don't need to struggle, rather mindfulness is well established, then you have some sort of a contentment. some sort of a slight happiness. This slight happiness can increase, and as a result, it can even go to the level of rupture. So this is how the piti or the piti sambojjhanga going to develop. And once it comes to piti is available, Buddha says, piti manassa kayopi passambati chittampi passambati. When the mind is happy, when such happiness is available, the whole mind going to be peaceful, whole body going to be peaceful. There is no any friction, there is no any kind of burning. So the mind and body both become tranquil. So this is how the passaddi sambojjhanga, tranquility, enlightenment factor going to develop. So at the beginning of your practice, there may not be such tranquility available. But because of the repetitive practice, so these qualities going to slowly bloom up. Now probably after 30 minutes you can understand, okay, body becomes very calm, very quiet, and no irritations, and almost like floating. So this is an indication now the passaddi sambojjhanga is in operation. Similarly, at the beginning of your practice, your mind is scattered, restless, but later, due to the repetitive application, more and more the mind becomes collected, concentrated. So as a result, you don't need to struggle. So kind of a niramisa piti, unworldly kind of happiness going to arise. So now mind also become calm, quiet, peaceful, tranquil. So this bodily tranquility and mind tranquility, mental tranquility, both are considered in this passaddi, tranquility enlightenment factor. Now, when all these things are in line, once all these are well satisfied, mind is well collected. Mind is well concentrated on top of that present phenomena. Suppose you are observing breath, and now you are observing various phases of breath. The beginning of breath, the middle of in-breath, the end of in-breath. Then there's a little gap. Then the beginning of out-breath, the middle of out-breath, the end of out-breath. Then again there's a little gap. Then again the beginning of in-breath, middle of in-breath, end of in-breath. So likewise, very carefully you are examining each aspect, each phase of the breath. Now the fair concentration is available. Otherwise you can't recognize all these minute details. So this is how the concentration, we can say it's a kanika samadhi, where each very subtle phenomena is focused, well focused by the mind. So the concentration is available. Pasaddha kayasya sukhino chittan samadhiyati. Buddha says when the body and the mind is well tranquil and well focused, this samadhi, concentration, enlightenment factor is going to develop. Now, upekkha is more interesting. Now, in order for equanimity, upekkha enlightenment factor, upekkha sambojjhanga to develop, everything else has to be in a fairly perfect situation. Mindfulness has to be established. Then the dhamma vichaya, examining has to happen properly. And we need to maintain balanced effort. And there may be less rupture. It is not that mind is elated or mind is in a rupture, but rather mind is fairly in a contented situation. This is a kind of a matured piti. And body, mind, both are in a peaceful state. And mind is well concentrated. On such situation, there is nothing to do, because everything is in a favorable situation. So we simply have to continue. We simply have to allow mind to continue this process, because whatever we expected is well satisfied now. So we don't need to struggle. We don't need to do anything specific, because now the process is happening by itself. So at this time, we simply have to let it happen. So this is how the equanimity, upekkha, sambojjhanga going to develop. Because we have basically nothing to do, the operation is going on and on properly, so we can take the back seat and look at the situation. we can simply allow the meditation to happen by itself. So again and again, when we are doing this kind of a facilitation, this kind of an observation, kind of a passive observation, then this equanimity, upekkha, enlightenment factor is going to develop. Now, I feel this is adequate for you to understand how using Kayanupassana, these seven enlightenment factors is going to develop. And similarly, Buddha explained how this is going to develop using Vedanupassana, how this is going to develop using Chittanupassana, and how this is going to develop using Dhammanupassana. I am not going to explain these things now. Maybe later we can take Anapanasati Sutta also as another topic. Later we can discuss in detail. But for today's purpose, I think it is enough for you to have this kind of understanding about seven enlightenment factors. Now, in this Sambhasava Sutta, Buddha takes us from here onwards actually. Now, I have to spend long time just for you to take to this level. But in this Sambhasava Sutta, Buddha directly talks about how one can develop enlightenment factors to facilitate this vijja and vimukti, knowledge and freedom. So this is in a way quite advanced. Now, quite advanced does not mean complicated. So, I mean, one beautiful quality of Buddha's teaching is more and more we develop, more and more we understand, the mind become quite simple. Simplicity leads to profundity, not complexity. So you can keep this statement as a motto in this whole spiritual practice. Simplicity leads to profundity or profound understanding, not the complexity. If our mind is complicated, if our mind is corrupted, if our mind is congested, if our mind is complicated, we can't have profound understanding. But on the other hand, if our mind is very clear, very clean, spacious, simple, then the deep understanding, deep insights are possible. Now, in this practice, so Buddha asks us to develop these seven enlightenment factors by facilitating seclusion, supported by seclusion, viveka nisitam, and supported by dispassion, that means viraga nisitam, supported by cessation, nirodha nisitam, and with an attitude of relinquishment, vasagga parinami. So this, you might, some of you might not understand what is going on here, because this is in a way somewhat advanced vipassana, we can say. This is not the early stages of vipassana, and this is in a way little for someone who has fairly practiced meditation, fairly practiced vipassana, then only he can think of this kind of a practice. Because at the beginning, we need a lot of effort. We need to do meditation. So we are in the doing mode. But more and more we practice, these various qualities are going to develop. The indriya, the faculties are going to develop. Then they become bala, the powers of spiritual powers. And then they become seven enlightenment factors. So after that, in order to develop further, we have to switch to a different mode. What I am trying to tell is, in early stages of our practice, we have to do something. It is true. Because we have to control the mind. We have to tame the mind. We have to use various techniques, various strategies to do this. But later, when more and more the practice is developing, once our mind becomes strong, equipped with these qualities, then we have to let it happen. Because we understand it is a kind of a cause and effect relationship. So you are already encountered with various insights. So these insights let the yogi to understand, okay, now let it happen. Don't struggle. Don't exert too much effort, Now let the practice happen by itself. Now we are not in the doing mode, but now we are in a kind of a letting go mode. So we let the process to happen. We become a passive observer. It does not mean we give up the practice. We continue our practice, but in a more relaxed attitude. So this Viveka Nishitam means, so the yogi has recognized, already recognized, kind of a Viveka, kind of a peace, kind of a cessation, kind of a spaciousness, stillness in the mind. So he more and more associate this stillness. He understand this stillness is the truth. He give more value to this stillness rather than trying to distract our mind with various sights, sounds, smells, taste, etc. Now he likes to maintain his mind in a more quiet, peaceful, clear, spacious stillness. So this is in a way a kind of a maturity in the spiritual life. So equanimity is more predominant and the stillness is available, and the yogi well established on this stillness, and Buddha encouraged us to associate this stillness more and more. He says Viveka Nishitam. So more and more dwell in this stillness, more and more dwell in this peacefulness. And when these other things are happening, when you are seeing something, when hearing sounds, when smelling various odors, when tasting various food, etc., when you are going through various tactile sensations, when even the thoughts are going on in the mind, maintain a dispassionate attitude. Don't try to go and grab them. Rather have a dispassion in the mind. So this is how the Viraga Nishitam. So we have kind of a not interested type of a attitude. This doesn't mean that we become quite passive, indifferent kind of attitude. When the situations are there, you know when to operate. This does not mean that you become simply a kind of a vegetable or kind of a passive person. Rather, you know when to operate. What is the proper time for you to take an action? And what is the proper time just to look at the situation, just to observe the situation? Because most of the time, we are putting our hand unnecessary. Because we have the doing syndrome. We always want to do something. We always want to intervene the situation. But rather, the practice leads us to have a very clear mind. There we understand, okay, this is the place I need to intervene and this is the place I don't need to intervene. So you have that understanding. So these enlightenment factors, therefore Buddha asks us to develop in a more relaxed manner and with a dispassionate attitude towards the other various phenomena. And to associate that cessation, because now the mind is not put on to see arising and passing, but rather mind is well settled in the cessation, well settled in the peacefulness, well settled in the spaciousness, stillness. And that is what Buddha is encouraging. And now yogi understand whatever arising is passing away. So there is no point of grasping, no point of holding, because it is ultimately going to cease. Ultimately going to disappear. So why am I going to cling? Why am I going to grasp? So he has the attitude of letting go. So this vasagga parinaming ripens in relinquishment. So more and more the yogi have the attitude of letting go. He is not going to grasp. And one of the very beautiful statement by Achancha. So he says, if you let go a little, you have little peace. If you let go more, you have more peace. If you let go totally, you have total peace. Simple as that. So more and more, then the letting go become one's theme of practice. And slowly, slowly, one is developing freedom and knowledge. Because more one is having knowledge, So this is the true knowledge. This is not something you have knowledge on physics, chemistry, and various other subjects. Those subject knowledge may lead you to grasp more and more. But the true knowledge, clear knowledge, ultimately leads us to freedom. Not for grasping, but for freedom. So therefore, this vijja and vimutti go hand in hand. When the fair amount of proper knowledge is available in the mind, proper understanding is available in the mind, it naturally leads to freedom of the mind. So this is how Buddha asks us to develop our mind, bhavana, and by developing this way, we are strengthening the mind. If not, our mind is fairly poor. If not, our mind is fairly weak. Therefore, on such weak environment, defilements can grow. On such weak situation, asavas can grow. But this kind of a developed situation, this kind of a strengthened situation, this kind of a spiritually matured situation, there is a less possibility of developing asavas, developing influxes. So this actually concludes whole Sabbasava Sutta. So therefore, I like to conclude today's sermon, and I now open the session for questions.
Questions,
yeah.
So I will read them in the order that I received.
Yes.
So the first question, dear Bhante, what is the connection between sati sampajana, clear comprehension, and investigation, dhamma vijaya, enlightenment factors? Are they directly linked?
Yeah, actually they are quite linked because now if you want to clearly see something, you have to have it well focused. Suppose if you want to investigate something under a microscope, you have to keep that glass without wavering, without shaking. So you are holding it, you hinge it to a proper appliances, and now you are keeping it very still, well firm. And then only you can very clearly investigate whatever is available in that testing glass or whatever it is. So similarly, we also want to investigate something. Now we are trying to investigate whether the breath is long or whether the breath is short, whether the breath is warm or whether the breath is cold, whether this is the middle, whether this is the beginning, whether this is the middle, whether this is the end. On the other hand, if you are investigating, say, a feeling, or is this the beginning of a feeling, or this is the middle, or this is the end? Is it only one feeling is there, or is it a collection of feelings? So likewise, if you want to clearly see these subtle details, the mindfulness becomes kind of a prerequisite. Actually, mindfulness is the one taking our mind to the present moment and well establish on this present phenomenon, and that actually facilitate the whole process of investigation. So therefore they go hand in hand.
Thank you, Bhante. The second question, dear Bhante, as I understand, there is no linear relationship between most of the concepts and practices in Dhamma. However, the seven enlightenment factors seem to go one after another, starting with mindfulness. Is this correct?
Yeah, I can agree with you. So if you read Anapanasati Sutta, this is how Buddha also has explained. So this is why I emphasize this. So Buddha starts very clearly with mindfulness and how it leads to develop Dhamma Vichaya, this investigation. And how investigation has to be continued with effort and the Virya Sambojjhanga. And once it is successful, then slowly kind of a happiness going to sort of blossom, going to promote, going to start. And then the body become tranquil, mind become tranquil. The tranquility may not be available at the very beginning of your practice. So tranquility is in a way a result of the previous successions of the previous enlightenment factors. And once this body and mind is calm, quiet, peaceful, happy, then only the concentration is going to arise. This is well mentioned. Say, for example, if you refer the Pali, Buddha says, Sukhino chittang samadhiyati. This means the body and the mind has to be happy in a very comfortable situation in order for this correct samadhi to arise. So this samadhi is a kind of a pleasant samadhi, pleasant concentration. It is not a kind of a block or kind of a hindered samadhi, but rather it's a kind of very pleasant, very peaceful type of a samadhi. Here what we are talking. And ultimately, when everything is successful, basically nothing to do, we simply have to observe the whole process in a little passive manner. So the equanimity enlightenment factor is going to develop. So therefore, I agree with you that these enlightenment factors or the arising of these enlightenment factors have a linear relationship. But anyway, as you proceed, certain enlightenment factors become dominant. Say, for example, more and more the whole practice is leading towards the upekkha, leading towards equanimity. And for such equanimity to have, you need to have mindfulness, definitely. And this mindfulness is not kind of an effortful mindfulness. Later, the mindfulness also evolved to an effortless mindfulness, kind of a pure awareness kind of a mindfulness. So therefore, these enlightenment factors, you can't say have the same quality when you consider them at your beginning of your practice and after years of practice. So suppose someone is practicing diligently. If you consider his say first 5 years, and he has certain level of enlightenment factors. But after 5 years of practice, he also has certain levels of enlightenment factors, but in various different qualities, different levels. And certain enlightenment factors have come to the front, especially mindfulness, investigation, and equanimity. They have come to the forefront. And concentration also evolve in a different manner. It is not kind of a focused attention kind of a concentration, rather it becomes a very opening kind of a concentration. It's a kind of a collected kind of a spaciousness is there, but not distracted. So these are various different qualities more and more evolving as you continue your practice.
Thank you, Bunting. The next question, dear Bhante, in the case of mindfulness of breath, can you explain the differences between samadhi and vipassana practice? Is it correct that in Anapanasati samadhi practice, we just know the breath as it goes in, out, and know the beginning, middle, and end of the breath? But using the breath in kaya nupassana, we go beyond the observations in samadhi practice, knowing the beginning, middle, end of the breath, to also knowing its element characteristics.
Yeah, actually, Anapanasati meditation is, we can say, kind of dualistic, where it has the capacity to develop concentration, purely concentration, and again, it has the capacity to further develop vipassana, because at the very beginning, you can't say immediately Anapanasati leads to develop vipassana. Rather, the beginning stage, we can say kind of establishment of mindfulness, introducing of clear comprehension. So likewise, certain aspects are there, samatha aspects are there. But later, you can convert it purely to vipassana. So say, for example, when you are clearly seeing, so this is the beginning of the breath, in-breath, this is the middle of the in-breath, this is the end of the in-breath. So this actually promotes clear comprehension. Now you are trying to investigate it. Now you are trying to examine the phenomenon. So this is how the, sampajanya going to start. So this is how actually the Dhamma Vichaya being facilitated. So we can say sampajanya is actually a kind of the seed of Dhamma Vichaya. Because Dhamma vichaya, we can say, is a more elementary level understanding of various phenomena. But the clear comprehension, on the other hand, may be the front level, but still clearly understanding various aspects. So therefore, they have some beautiful relationship. So if you are interested purely on samatha practice, this too much investigation is not encouraged. Because proper investigation actually promotes vipassana, insights. But on the other hand, if you want to have pure samatha, just concentration, then we have to accept this phenomenon as it is. We have to have a kind of a permanence notion, not an impermanent notion. We have to have a permanent notion. In a way, we are conditioning the mind. And this is how the samatha practice is being developed. And actually, that kind of a practice further leads to promote, you know, that's what you call anapanasati nimitta, or patibhaga nimitta, counterpart sign, going to arise through such practice. And then one may drop anapanasati and one has to pay attention to that counterpart sign, nimitta. And that is how one may get on to absorptions. But on the other hand, in vipassana practice, such nimitta is not used for investigation. Rather, the breath itself is being used for investigation, and further it will lead to various feelings, and then one may start to observe the mind. And this is how these 16 steps are well explained in Anapanasati.
Okay, thank you, Bunting.
Yeah.
Next question. How does the practice of the Bhojanga facilitate healing, specifically curing diseases? This is clearly mentioned in the suttas where the Buddha himself asked monks to chant the Bhojanga for healing illnesses that he himself had.
Yeah, of course. This is a very interesting question. Thanks for raising it. Because you can understand this whole, actually the early stages of practice, we can say, it's a kind of a struggle because you are not yet, skillful enough. Still the hindrances are available and they are so powerful. And a lot of anger is still available, lust is available, restlessness is available, and maybe doubts are available, regrets are available. And are they really making mind happy, healthy, or are they really vicious? Now you can understand, so all these hindrances, maybe it is kind of burning lust, maybe it is kind of burning anger, sort of extreme restlessness, kind of obsessive attitude, kind of obsessions happening in the mind, and a lot of doubts. And all these are quite detrimental to our health. So this is where what we call psychosomatic diseases are going to arise. All these mental defilements are leading to health issues. So mind illnesses are going to lead various bodily illnesses. But if you consider the opposite, now once you are going to come to the enlightenment factors, now the mind is fairly strong. Mind has less hindrances because enlightenment factors and hindrances are quite opposite. You can't have enlightenment factors when hindrances are present. So the hindrances are fairly weak when the enlightenment factors are available, strong. And as a result, your mind becomes, as I said, very quiet, very peaceful, quite equanimous, quite mindful, quite happy, stress-free. So these are, in a way, very good positive qualities for a mind. So such positive qualities of a mind is a healthy mind. So healthy mind leads to a healthy body. So the mind is healthy and the body is also going to become healthy. So that is how, if one can arouse these enlightenment factors, if you can strengthen these enlightenment factors, it actually leads to have very healthy body as well, because mind is the forerunner. Mind is the main deciding factor. So when one has a very healthy mind, very positive mind, fairly peaceful mind, that actually makes himself fairly healthy bodily as well.
Thank you, Bhante. Second to last question that I've received. Bless the Triple Gem, Bhante. Sata, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya, Dharmatas arise in us one by one or all five individually?
No, these are called Indriya or faculties, Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya. Saddha is the faith, Virya is the effort, Sati is the mindfulness, Samadhi is the concentration, Panya is the wisdom. So actually sometimes they all are summarized as 37 awakening factors, Bodhipakya Dhamma. So at the beginning we have 4 Satipatthana, and then we have 4 Sammapadhana, that means 4 types of effort. Then one have 4 types of Iddipada, spiritual wings. And then one have 5 faculties, Pancha Indriya. And when further one have Pancha Bala, spiritual powers. And then getting on to enlightenment factors, Sapta Bojjhanga. And lastly we have the path factors or Noble Eightfold Path. So this is how typically it is categorized. Typically, it is tabulated or explained, and therefore, these faculties, Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya, we can say just before these enlightenment factors. Actually, these are the same qualities at different levels. Now, you have mindfulness at Kaya Anupassana level, and then you have some different time kind of mindfulness at the Vedana Anupassana level. And you have further developed kind of mindfulness at the Vedana Chitta Anupassana level. And again, more developed, more refined in Dhamma Anupassana level. And such mindfulness further evolve. Now, none of these qualities, don't think that they are fixed. All these things, all these spiritual qualities are evolving. This is how they are developing. This is how they are coming to their fruition or their completeness. Their maturity. They start very slightly, very weak manner, but slowly, slowly, because of our repetitive practice, they are going to develop. And the 5 faculties, Indriya, we can say typically, according to the typical explanations, they are before enlightenment factors, and more, actually, when the spiritual faculties, Indriyas are developed, then they become enlightenment factors.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah. And the last question that I received, how would a long-standing practitioner know that Bojjhanga are actually gradually developing in him or her? And thereafter, how would he know when Sati Sambojjhanga is transitioning into Samma Sati?
Yeah. Actually, these are quite subtle and... So actually more during our practice it is quite difficult to understand all these in detail, because if you are trying to investigate and refer all these things, checking, okay, am I now contributing to sati, am I now developing Dhamma Vichaya enlightenment factor and all these blah blah things in your practice, I mean it's not the objective. Don't think that these explanations of these suttas are for you to readily use immediately in your practice. Rather, these are more elaborations, explanations given by the Buddha, how when we develop, I mean, when we are engaged in practice, how these are properly happening. So this actually convinces us. This kind of an explanation given by the Buddha helps us to give us a lot of confidence. It is not waste of time. It is not just looking at air, it is not waste of time, but rather it has a proper meaning. It has a proper reason. That is why we are doing it. So why are we developing meditation? Why are we engaged in it? Why are we repeating it? So it all has reasons. So that reasoning, that convincing is available on these suttas. And more and more you practice, then probably you can understand the presence of these qualities. Say for example, if you are simply a beginner, you started mindfulness practice just 1 week ago. On such situation, you can't even recognize the quality of mindfulness, because it is quite strange to you. And you haven't yet probably experienced concentration at all. It is not yet available. But more and more you practice, then you may have a feeling, okay, at this time the mindfulness is present. Say in the morning I had mindfulness. But when I went to a shop, when I went to my office, mindfulness is not there. Again, when I am driving, okay, I had mindfulness. Once I come back home, okay, I had mindfulness. So likewise, you start to feel it. You start to feel when the presence of mindfulness and the absence of mindfulness. Similarly, you will start to understand the presence of concentration and the absence of concentration. Likewise, these spiritual qualities are going to be apparent to you. It may not happen within a day. So that is why the faculty level is where, the indriya level is where you can individually recognize these different qualities. What is a quality of saddha, faith? What is the quality of mind empowered with effort? What is the quality of mind empowered with mindfulness? What is the quality of mind empowered with concentration? And what is the quality of mind empowered with wisdom? So likewise, you can distinguish these different spiritual qualities, and it is a gradual process. Don't expect you to understand all these subtle details immediately. You may not be, and I didn't actually. In my own practice, if I just reveal some information, in my own practice, I didn't have such understanding. But Buddha's teaching actually encouraged me to continue my practice, even when I am not much clear about the practice. Because none of us can fully understand the path and then travel the path. It may not happen. That is where we need a fair amount of faith at the beginning. We have to have a lot of faith on our teacher, lot of faith on the Dhamma, lot of faith on the Buddha. And that is how we start. Because we can't have clear understanding, 100% complete understanding about the whole path and then start practice. It may not happen. Rather, we step on to practice, we start to swim. And as we start to swim, then you may understand various other styles. Butterfly styles, there are freestyle, there are different styles are there. But you can't simply read a comprehensive treatise on swimming and then start swimming, then it is difficult. But rather you better jump and start to swim. Are you swimming now, Jennifer?
Yes, I am swimming, Bhante. Yeah. I'm learning the various styles.
Good.
Bhante, I believe that's all for the questions that I received, and I don't see any raised hands either.
Right.
So you may share merits.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah, okay. Then we'll wind up the session by sharing merits, and we'll take another sutta on next day. Actually, I have a little, notice that the next session, actually next Wednesday, we won't be able to conduct the session. That is on 2nd September, there won't be a session, but we will be conducting it on 6th Sunday. That is 6th Sunday, we have the session. So therefore, I ask you to join on Sunday 6th, not coming Sunday, but on 6th Sunday we have the session. There won't be any session on 2nd Wednesday. So with that little notice, actually Jennifer has already informed all of you using emails, and I am also now reminding. With that little notice, let's conclude the session by reciting the traditional verses. Ittavata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang සබ්බේ දේවා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා එත්තාවතාච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සබ්බේ භූතා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා එත්තාවතාච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සබ්බේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු.